Welcome to the Tipsy Tennis Podcast. I am your host, Adam Borak, and this is the show where we sometimes talk about tennis, sometimes talk about other stuff. Normally, there is a drink involved. However, you are a professional athlete, and so you're drinking water.
Mm-hmm. Cheers. Stay hydrated.
Our water's over here.
Yeah, hang on.
Hydrate or dehydrate. Today, my guest is a phenomenal tennis player, an even better person, full of so much spark and life, and I'm really happy to finally get you on the podcast. I had opportunities, I'm sure we could have done something online, but I didn't want to. I want everything to be in person, so we can really get into some cool stuff. Without further ado, I would like to introduce my guest for this episode, Sharmada Balu.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to do this.
So a little bit, give us a little bit of background on yourself. So you're obviously a professional tennis player from India.
How did my journey begin?
Yeah, so actually, the first question I usually like to ask my guess is, how did you start playing tennis?
Okay, so it all began with my father. He was a cricketer. He loves cricket. He loves sports in general. He used to play it every single day, but his family couldn't afford to make him play because they weren't well-to-do, and he had to stop playing and start working. So he decided that later on in life, his children would be athletes, and they would do something in that field. So before I was born, it was kind of decided that I was going to be an athlete. So when I was 4, he put me into gymnastics because he knew that any sport that anyone plays, the common denominator is fitness. You got to be fit. And so he just put me into gymnastics. That was the only thing that was there near the house. And it started good. I was pretty good at it. And then there was, I think, some incident in the gym that where someone got injured. And he wasn't a big fan of it. So he's like, I don't see much scope in this right now. And right next door, there was a tennis court. And he's like, we're going to do that. So it just kind of shifted from gymnastics to tennis. And yeah, started playing tennis when I was 7 years old and stuck to it.
Did he know anything about tennis?
No, absolutely nothing.
So like you guys went in completely blind?
Yes, for sure. And then, yeah, I started playing good, and I liked hitting the ball and just like winning points, and it seemed like I was good at what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I started winning a couple of tournaments, even when I was like 8, 9 years old, under 10s and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So then just decided to, you know, uproot my entire family and move from south of Bangalore to north of Bangalore for an academy, which was really, really good back then.
Your entire family made that shift?
Yes, all 4 of us went from South Bangalore to North Bangalore, and we were there for almost 15 years. Mm-hmm. And even now, they stay there.
What academy was it?
It was called Mahesh Bhupathi's Tennis Academy. Mm-hmm. So,
and yeah. How old were you when you played?
I went there when I was 9 years old.
So your family at 9 years old was like, she's a tennis prodigy, we are moving and doing it full time.
Yeah.
How did you manage school at the same time?
So I went to school every day till the first grade. But even then, for the next 2 years or so, I used to get special permission from the principal to go 2 hours later in the morning. Like if it started at 8, I would get permission to go at 10. Mm-hmm. So I could finish training and then go to school. And then I would go to finish school and then go back to training in the evening. Mm-hmm. So I would be done by sometimes 6, 6:30. And then homework, eat, sleep, repeat the next day. And when I was 12, I got picked up by Mahesh Bhupathi for a sponsored program where they took like top Indian junior girls and boys. Mm-hmm. So once I was part of that program, it was impossible for me to go to school. So I started homeschooling. We have that option was available in India where, you know, you can just choose your syllabus to write the 10th grade and then you join college. So after 10th grade, in India, we have like pre-university and then university. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. I was still part of my school, which is super cool, by the way. I love my school. And I had the best time, and I would try to go as often as I could because I really enjoyed going to school. So just a couple of weeks a year, not every day. Mm-hmm. But that was pretty much my life.
And at what age, did you start to see, like, well, I mean, you kind of jumped full, like, head first into a lot of it, but so I guess the question is, like, at what age did it really become, like, you know, really tennis professional oriented? Like, did you want to become a tennis professional, actually?
I don't know.
Were just playing for the sake of playing?
I was just playing. See, I like winning. Uh-huh. I enjoy winning. I don't like losing. It sucks. But I like winning. I was winning more than I was losing. It was going great. I enjoyed being on court. I felt really comfortable on court. Like, you know, I don't know how to explain it. I just felt like I belong there, and I knew how to navigate things on the court. Mm-hmm. So, I really enjoyed it, and I was winning more than I was losing, like I said. So there was, I didn't find any reason to stop. Mm-hmm. And it was going great, and yeah, I just decided I wanted more of it. That's all I knew, like, you know, from the beginning. Since I was like 4 years old, been doing fitness and gymnastics and tennis and not really very many other things. So that kind of just became my life. And it was, I don't think that at that age you know that if you want to become a pro or not. You're just doing things that you enjoy doing and just going with the flow. So I think it was more like, I think it was more of my parents making the decision whether I need to study or I need to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm super lucky that I have like unbelievably supportive parents who, I mean, just general normal social pressure was there. Like, you know, like I'm sure even for them, like everyone is like, oh, she doesn't go to school. What if this doesn't work out or what if that or things like that, you know. But I didn't feel that much from my parents. I always knew that, you know, they're going to be there for me no matter what. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, it stands true. So I didn't feel that specifically from them. But I also enjoyed studying. Mm-hmm. So I kind of felt like I would be okay either ways. But I think to answer your question, when did I turn pro? I turned pro when I was 17. So, like, I had a pretty good, decent junior career. Two and a half years, I didn't do so well in the juniors. I was still in top five in India throughout my life in every single category of 12, 14, 16, 18s. Mm-hmm. And I think the 18s were the best year for me, 16 to 18. I won a couple of national championships. I was number one in the country. I turned pro, I started playing pro women's tournament when I was 17. And into my first few tournaments, I made quarters. And I think my fourth or fifth tournament, I won the title. So wow. It was a great, great transition. Mm. And the future looked super bright. So I decided to just go with it.
Wow. I didn't know you were number one in juniors for... You were completely dominating it, yeah. Dominating the game, and which actually, so I, we've known each other. We met back in 2019. Shout out to Rishika. We met at her wedding. I came to India for the first time. Mm-hmm. I remember I had to take off from school 2 weeks. I was in college, probably my senior year, mm-hmm. and. I asked my professors, I'm like, hey, I got invited to this wedding. It's in India. I got to go. Or I don't need to go, but like, I want to go. And so some of them said, okay. And then some of them were like, well, you're going to miss and some classes and stuff. And
you can always study later.
I ended up failing one of those classes.
I take that back.
Computer science 2. I ended up missing because over there in my school, they're like, if you miss a certain amount of days, then it starts like eating away at your grade.
Oh, that's not very nice.
Yeah, I know. the only professor that was like really into it was my, of course, my philosophy mm-hmm. professor. She's like, you gotta go. And for me, I thought it was a one-time in a life. I thought it was a one-time in a lifetime.
Kind of a situation back then, yeah.
But turns out I'm back in India for another wedding, and that's why I came here again. So we met back in 2019, and then we met again. We stayed in contact. It was like a whole tennis, bunch of tennis players. There's that one golf player. I forgot her name. Starts with a V.
Vani,
yeah.
Yes. Shout out to Vani.
And and then we met again in, you came to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And you visited me in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You were playing like a few tournaments, and you had like a cousin or something like that who's mm-hmm. in Queens?
Mm-hmm. New Jersey.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah. So not New York, but New York. I hate it whenever somebody is like, oh.
I'm in New York, but they're actually in New Jersey.
Yeah, just say New Jersey.
Yeah.
It's because they know they're shaming it. If you're from New Jersey, you should feel bad about it. Anyway, so you came to visit. I'm getting completely sidetracked. We played at, I took you to the U.S. Open courts.
Yes.
National Tennis Center.
Yes.
Flushing, Queens.
That was a blast. That was a great day.
Yeah. And then not only that, we went to the grass courts at Forest Hills.
Yes.
So we went to the new U.S. Open and the old U.S. Open. Do you remember that?
Yes, absolutely.
And
we played with wooden rackets.
Yeah. And you told, we were walking around, we went to like a bakery, and
so you told me a story that I honestly think about all the time.
Which one? I have many stories.
Yeah, I know, right? And it was actually really nice. We walked to the bakery, and we're like going around Forest Hills, which is a, you know, nice area, and you mentioned that I want to lead this in a particular mm-hmm. way. So let me start with you playing almost, you qualified for the Olympics, right?
No, I didn't qualify for the Olympics.
You didn't qualify. You were on the,
I said I was out. one of the people that got shortlisted to play the 2012 Olympics at Sanya. Yeah.
And then you got injured.
Mm-hmm.
So what? So you were shortlisted to play the Olympics, and yeah. So actually, talk about a little bit about that, because then I want to go a certain way, but this is like kind of
so yeah
the context.
Continuing my transition from juniors to pro women's tennis, that was pretty great. It was actually a really good transition. I was playing some of the best tennis of my life, and I was doing well in the 15s and the 25. I mean, back then it was 10s and 20s. Mm-hmm. So I was doing pretty good in that, and my ranking was like around 500s or 600s when I was 17.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I got shortlisted as one of the four people who were selected to possibly play with Sania Mirza in London Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing a tournament, I think I was playing a semis, and I came out of the match, I was doing my cool down and stuff, and I twisted my ankle, mm-hmm. and I completely tore all my ligaments in the ankle. And it was really, really bad, and my dad had to come take me to the doctor. And he's like, this is really bad. You're gonna need surgery. You're gonna be out a while.
How old were you?
I was 19 or 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, so we did MRIs. We did all of these things. I had to get surgery, and I was in a wheelchair for like 3 months. But yeah, I was out for almost a year, but I did not get surgery. I decided that I'm gonna get stronger and come back without the surgery, because I'm petrified of hospitals and doctors, and I just don't like going to hospitals. So I would do anything I could to avoid getting a surgery. So yeah, I just kind of like kept telling myself, no, you're gonna be better, you just stick to these things. If there's a way that you can, if there's absolutely no way and you have to get surgery, then you have to get surgery,
mm-hmm.
but at least try, like, you know. So yeah, I don't know, I guess I found a way to fix my ankle without surgery. And yeah, I was out for almost 8 months before I could step onto the court. I started training slowly, and then I was back on court like, I think 7 months I was off, and 2 months later I started slowly mm-hmm. getting
I was back on court in 7 months or something like that. And towards the end of the year, I was competing again.
I'm curious, what were you doing during those like injured months where like you can't do anything kind of?
I was bound to the wheelchair, so I was having fun, people just doing things for me. Because I can't do anything, right? So it's tough, like, you know, when you're so active and your whole day is scheduled for you. And it was the first time in my life where I was just stuck and I could not do anything and I was dependent on other people to do things for me. Mm-hmm. So it was, and I was young and energetic and, you know, not as tired as I am now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was definitely like a difficult few weeks, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just accept it, like, okay, this is where it is, and what can I do? How can I make the most of the situation and go back to doing my things that I enjoy doing?
Did you always believe that you were like gonna come back and make it to the same level?
Yeah, always. I mean, I knew, like, I feel like so many times, like, you know, we keep getting knocked down. Like, I've said this before as well. It's taken me a while to realize in depth how actually true this is. Like, I feel like this sport teaches you, yes, for sure, every single sport teaches you something that you can only learn while going through the journey that you go through with them. But especially in tennis, you take a lot more hits and a lot more losses than wins, if you look overall, unless you are the exception like Nadal, Djokovic, or Roger, which is just like it's a handful of them amongst the thousands that play every year, right? So it's not easy. It's not easy to keep getting punched down and keep finding a way to come back up. Like week after week, you're taking losses.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you win, but you're not winning every single tournament, right? You are taking losses at some point. So it's difficult, like, you know, it teaches you to find a way to keep pulling yourself back up again and going the next day and facing, like, I lost this week, I have to go tomorrow and play the next week. So like, how do you come back from that? How do you find a way to do better than you did last week? Like, it builds you, it shapes you in a way that nothing else does.
How do you come back from it?
Oh, well, lately I've been not having the best, you know, trajectory. I've been taking a lot more losses than wins.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely difficult, and there's a lot of chatter around you as well, because, you know, been playing at a certain level and now you're finding it difficult to, you know, match that or go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that, yeah, I've had some pretty difficult moments, but at the end of the day, you accept it for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You sulk in it a little bit, and then you leave it behind. I do not carry it. I try my very best not to carry it forward. Sometimes it happens, but I feel like I have to be kinder to myself and be like, you know, it happens. Like, you know, what can you do? You played a shit match, probably the worst match of your life, but it's done. What are you going to do now? Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, the more you keep it in and you keep focusing on that, you're not going to get better. You're like living in the past. You're living in what you did, but you just sit, you list down the things. For me, I list down the things that I didn't do so well.
Mm-hmm.
And I work on them in the coming days that leading up to my next tournament. And just focus on the process rather than the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Because, if I focus too much on the outcome that I want to win, win, win. I mean, of course, it's there internally. Every single person that steps onto the court wants to win. Nobody goes there to lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's always there internally. But I focus on trying to do the right things and believing in myself. I think that's the more losses you take, the confidence also goes low. It's difficult. It's difficult. But you have to fake it till you make it, I guess. So, like, I think you have to keep faking the confidence as well, because you don't know. Like, I feel like sometimes your brain is smart, but it's also really stupid. It listens to anything that you say. It could be true or false. It just believes. You just believe it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, even if I'm not feeling the best, even if I feel like, oh my God, I can't put a single ball inside the court, I'll just be like, no, you're good. Like, you know, you've done this before. You can do it. Like, you know, even when I'm feeling like 0 out of 10, I just fake it. Like, fake it. They're not going to know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't tell. Like, it's something that I try. Inside, I'll just be like, oh my God, better not miss that ball. Mm-hmm. You better not miss that ball, like inside. But like outside, I'll be like, yeah, I'm not going to miss that ball. But inside, I'm like, you better not miss the ball. Yeah. Like, you know, it happens. But yeah, that's what I do. I try to fake it. And then eventually you start getting, it's not even the wins. You start winning more points. You start winning more games. You start pulling more sets. It's a slow process. It's always step by step. And yeah, I think that once you hit, like, every player goes through this, right? So, like, the moment you hit rock bottom, there's no way but up. So, there's no way. I mean, maybe, yeah, okay, rock bottom, okay, you dig a little bit more. You go a little bit more, but then eventually you're going to go up. Mm-hmm. So, you just have to hang in there. I think it's perseverance, and there's no other option. It's just how badly do you want to climb back up. So, I'm just going through it, I'm just sticking to it, and I think the most important thing is self-belief no matter what. And yes, it's difficult, like it wavers here and there, but you gotta hold on to it because it doesn't matter. Like, I feel like back then when I was a lot younger, I don't think I had that self-belief. I think everyone else around me had the self-belief, if that makes sense. Everyone else used to come and tell me, oh, you're good, you're going to win, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I'm good, I'm going to win. Like, you know, it was like the confidence that came from outside,
Did being a top junior, I mean, obviously had something to do with it?
There were better juniors than me. I was an okay junior. I was not the best.
you're really number one.
But only those 2 years I was top five, but there were other players also that was better than me, right? So just that 16 to 18 is when I really was good, was the best mm-hmm. junior in the country. Mm-hmm. But there were other players who were all my friends now who were like really good. They were really good juniors. Mm-hmm. So they were also playing, and like, you know, I felt like everything came from me, the confidence and everything else came to me externally. It was, yes, internally, when everything comes to you externally, you also automatically feel better, right? Okay, that confidence is there. Yeah, I'm going to win today, like things like that. Like, you know, oh yeah, I think I'm good. Like, you feel that. But when everyone externally is like, ah, okay, doesn't give you anything, and it's like, okay, I think maybe your time's done now, or things like that. Mm-hmm. You used to be good, and things like that. Yeah, you hear a lot of that shit. Yeah. So when all of this happens, you don't let it. I don't let it enter. Sometimes it does get into my head, mm-hmm. but then you just kind of like, they're not lying, right? You just accept it that, you know, yeah, I used to be good, but then what's happening now? Like, how do I go beyond what I used to be, mm-hmm. like, you know? So I'm not letting go of my own belief.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things you said there that really stuck out to me. Let me preface it with my entire career has just been loss after loss. Like, I don't think, like, I trained every single day. I was going to the gym like 4 or 5 times a week. I was like, I feel like I had everything going my way, mm-hmm. but I just could not win for the life of me. And so I had, like, honestly, such a terrible tennis career when it comes to like competitive juniors. But similarly, even though I never had the wins that I wish I did, I never lost the belief in myself. Mm-hmm. And I always tried to just be the best tennis player I can be.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, it's professionally, whether it's not, I find fulfillment in
exactly.
going through,
like,
the process.
That needs to be there. That joy of being on court and enjoying needs to be there. I'm not gonna lie, I lost that a little bit earlier in my tennis career. I was not enjoying being on court anymore. Mm-hmm. So that kind of also took a little bit of, it drained me out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's why I took a break, apart from multiple other reasons. So I feel like as long as there's belief, there's joy, and you're just looking forward to doing that every single day, mm-hmm. and you have that discipline, like, you know, because like I said, confidence, motivation, everything is like very fleeting. It comes and it goes, like, you know, but the discipline, the work that you put in, that's what's going to carry you through. Mm-hmm. I feel it's like it becomes second nature.
Yeah.
And I think that's what sets a few people apart.
And there was one particular thing that you said before where, like, your thoughts, what you think is what you end up believing.
Absolutely. That's
and
so true.
There's, like, you know, we hear like all the time, like, tennis is as much mental as it is physical. And
I think it's more.
You think
it's more mental? Yeah. I think physical, everyone is strong. Everyone is fit. If you're not, you're not going to be a good tennis player.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be good. But if you want to go beyond, that's a common denominator, right? Like, everyone knows how to hit a forehand. Everyone knows how to hit a backhand. Everyone can move. Everyone is strong. It's the decisions you make
mm-hmm.
at 4-all, 30-all, 3-all, 15-all, deuce, whatever it is. What's the decision you're going to make? Like, you know,
mm-hmm.
how you control your emotions, what patterns you recognize. And it's instinctive, right? And what's instinctive? What are the decisions you make when you're instinctive? It's all here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's way more mental than physical or skill. Those are things that, like, I don't know if I'm explaining it properly, but I feel like that's
no,
a common denominator.
Yeah.
That has to be there. Without that, you're not getting anywhere.
Uh-huh.
So those are, I feel, like, basic skills. But I think the mental is what sets every single person apart from each other.
Let me ask you. How many rackets have you broken?
Zero.
You've never broken a racket?
I've actually broken one when I hit a smash.
Oh,
I hit a smash
accident.
And it broke, but no. Oh. I don't throw rackets at all. Sometimes I get angry and I just do like this, but I make sure it doesn't touch the ground, and I feel really, really shitty if I touch the ground. So, like, I think, but that's been instilled to me by my father, because
yeah.
I saw when we were playing juniors and he was traveling with me, there was this one boy, we used to play, like, it used to be boys and girls together every single time. And there should be this one guy who used to be good, and he used to just, like, throw rackets, and it was, like, a cool thing to do. Like, and everyone used to be talking about it. And I never did any of that. And one match, I just went and I threw the racket, but I fake threw the racket. Like, I was just like, like, you know, I'm mad. And I just threw, like, and my father was glaring at me. And I won that match. It was, like, a pretty easy match. And I came back after the match, and he's like, you are never throwing another racket, or I'm going to take all your rackets away. You're never disrespecting the sport like that.
Mm-hmm.
After that day, I have never thrown the racket. I was maybe 13 or 14
mm-hmm.
that time. So, no, that's a big no-no.
I was such a problem child. At some point, so you had your injury, you started to, like, come back to the sport and competing again.
I kind of feel like it was a short break, but when I look back into it, it really was not. It was 4.5 years, almost 5 years, I didn't play tennis. I played maybe 4 or 5 times in clubs with members.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they called me and I just went like that. So it was that, yeah, I never played more than that. I didn't even go to the gym. I was like, I went complete 180.
So, yeah, so what, why?
I don't know. I just kind of felt like I got injured. I was always, like I said, I was doing great at my, by then I was 300 and 330 or something in doubles. I was 580 or something like that in singles. And I was just getting injured. I was not feeling so good. I didn't have funding. I didn't have sponsors. So it was my dad primarily funding me. And I was always away a lot. And it was just multiple things that just kind of attacked me from everywhere. And I didn't know how to go about it. I didn't know how to deal with it. And I just kind of, like, decided that I don't want to do this anymore, because, like, it had reached a point where I spent almost 8-9 months trying to figure out what was wrong with my wrist, because I did every possible thing under the sun to figure out. I could not eat, like, I could not hold a spoon, my fingers would swell up, my wrist would hurt so much, and no amount of painkillers would fix it, and I just didn't know what else I could do. And then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna take a break, I don't want to play anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was just, that just stopped. And then for the first time in my life, I had no clue what I was doing, because all I knew was how to play the sport.
Mm-hmm.
That was my entire identity. So then I went through like an identity crisis, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh my God, who am I if I'm not a tennis player? It's always been Sharmada, the tennis player. Like, and you take tennis out of it, who is Sharmada? Like, you know, like it was like a whole thing. But I think that when I look back to it, I feel like I'm so glad that I had that realization and whatever I went through so early, mm-hmm. when I was 24, 25. I feel like I'm glad that in a way I you know, deep dived into my identity crisis, mm-hmm. because when I came out of it, it was so clear. Like, I took a few months off. I was just chilling, doing absolutely nothing, mm-hmm. and just reading, writing, painting, just doing my hobbies. And then I decided to venture into clothing line for women's tennis. Mm-hmm. I was trying to figure that out on my own, like making few designs, going to suppliers. I spent like a couple of months into it, and I have like a whole portfolio even mm-hmm. now that I can go ahead if I want to. But at that time, I didn't feel like it was the right thing to do. Like, I didn't feel like it was the right time to come out with that. Mm-hmm. There were still a couple of things that I had to figure out, and I decided to put it on hold. And then I started interning at a fashion, I started interning at Armani, mm-hmm. to figure out how the clothing industry works and things like that. I was just bored and I didn't know what else to do. Like, my whole day was open. Imagine you have a schedule every single day of your life from 5:30 a.m. till 6:30 a.m. And the only thing you do after that is eat, sleep, watch television, eat and sleep. To having your whole day open, in the beginning, it was so exciting. I was like, oh, there's no one to tell me what to do. I can do whatever I want. But after that, you're like, oh my God, what do I do? And that gave me like time to like introspect and things like that. And then I actually took up a corporate job at Target Corporation. Mm-hmm. And my mom was like, oh, you're gonna absolutely hate it. You're gonna come back in 2 weeks and be like, why am I doing this? And that was not the case.
No,
I quite enjoyed it, I'm not gonna lie. So I joined Target Corporation. I made a bunch of great friends. It was a 9-to-5 desk job, mm-hmm. but even there I found ways to like push myself and set targets and boundaries and cross boundaries for myself. Like, you know, it was a different side of life. Like, I have never dealt with the corporate side of life or how most of the world works. Like, you know, majority of them are into business, corporate and soft skills, social skills, all of these, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas an athlete, it's another side of life. Like, you're completely responsible for your, especially individual sport, you can do it your own way. Whereas here, you have to navigate how to deal with people, you have a boss, your boss has a boss, and it teaches you a set of skills that this doesn't teach you, sport doesn't teach you. And it's the same for them. Like, you know, this is a different side of life, whereas corporate is a different, I don't know if I'm, mm-hmm. it's like two different sides of the coin, I felt.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I did it because it taught me, I developed a few other set of skills that I would not have if I did not do that. And it made me more curious as to how it works and how can I incorporate that into sports later, maybe if I want to do something. And I feel like I'm a pretty creative person, and I decided to, you know, I always wanted to get into marketing if I ever decided to do something other than tennis and, you know, something in the corporate sector. So I started pushing their boundaries and being like, hey, this is something I want to do. Can you like help me out? Is there something that I can navigate from what I'm doing to that? So I was doing a bunch of things and I was like pushing myself even there. And I felt like that's the exact same thing I was doing in tennis. Like, you know, I just felt like I wanted to be the best at whatever I was doing. If I'm going to be a carpenter, I want to be the best damn carpenter. Mm-hmm. So that's like my attitude towards anything I do. So I started recognizing those. And yeah, I just had a great time. There was like no expectations. There was no, you know, like, oh, you must achieve these things from anyone except me. Mm-hmm. Whereas in tennis, I felt like it was also external. So I kind of like got both. And then during COVID, I kind of got, I think that gave me a lot of clarity. I don't know, I just went through like a journey, like, you know. And when, before we go into COVID, when I was still working, and I did not quit after that second week, like my mom predicted I would. And further, I was actually, I worked there for almost 2 years.
Oh,
and
wow.
That's when I realized that, you know, I can actually do anything I want to do. Like, that's when I realized who I am. Like, I'm not just Sharmada the tennis player. I'm Sharmada whoever I want to be. Like, I got the belief and the confidence in myself, not as a tennis player, but as a person, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the most important things that has ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, tomorrow if I have to stop playing tennis, for whatever reasons, I know I'm going to be okay. I know that you take everything away from me, I know I'm still going to be okay, because I have that skill or will or that hunger or that motivation just to find passion or happiness in whatever is around me and build it from that. So I realized that that's something that's already instilled in me, and no matter what goes away or what's there, that's not going to go away.
That's that particular thing was like, is the thing that I think about, like, a little bit, I think a little bit too much, like the fact that the way you put it, it's like you have something you grew up with your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you eat, slept, breathe tennis.
Mm-hmm.
But who are you once you take tennis away? Who is Sharmada?
Mm-hmm.
And so what
I feel like a lot of people go through it, and it's not easy. Let me tell you, it was not easy coming to this conclusion or finding this belief or that this, whatever it is that I went through to find this, to be okay after having that crisis, you know? So I feel like...
What was the crisis like? Like, what were the thoughts? What was...
I was like,
it
was pretty negative, I'm not going to lie. It was like, oh my God, your life is over. Like, you know, it was like everything, all your accomplishments, it ends now. Like, you're a tennis player. Now who are you? Nobody's going to care. Nobody is going to give a shit about what you do now. It was like a spectrum of negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how your brain works. Like, instantly you go into like the worst possible case scenario and just stay there. And so I went through it, and you know, then if you're going through hell, they say keep going through it, and that's what I did. And then sometimes, I don't know, like, I feel like if you want to find a solution to something and you keep at it, you will find one. But if you just want to dwell on the problem, then you will still be dwelling on the problem. Like I said, your brain is stupid. It's just, it's going to do whatever you decide you want to do, or you feel like you want to, you know what I mean? Like, yeah,
yeah,
like if you want to find a solution, okay, you have a problem. You're going to have thousands of problems your entire life. It's not just one problem. You're going to keep getting one after the other. Like, that's life. You're going to keep getting punched down at. So
yeah.
Like, if you want to find a solution, you got to put your energy on that.
Yeah. And that particular crisis, I think, like, during your 20s, I mean, I'm in my 20s right now, I'm 26. I know you're not supposed to ask a woman her age.
I'm a lot older.
No,
I'm 30 years old.
So, you know, they always say, like, you know, 20s is like when you try to figure out who you are. There's a lot of, you know, this up and down, and like exactly what you're saying, I think maybe the reason why I think about it so much.
I think even that, I think that this, they say that on a generic basis, but I don't think you should put yourself in the numbers game, because every single person is different. Every single person is different. You might be having this identity crisis when you're 40 years old.
Yeah.
Or you might have it when you're 19 years old. I mean, it's rare, but it happens. Like, you might, a lot of people go through life without even figuring any of these things out.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to be like, okay, in my 20s, I have to figure out who I am. You figure out who you are when you figure out who you are.
Yeah. And I always saw it that way, where, like, you know, it, like, things happen just as they happen, and just don't try to think about it too much.
Mm-hmm.
It coincidentally started happening to me, where I'm like trying to figure it out, like, what's going on. Like, the fact when I didn't play tennis in college, like, that was the biggest thing I was looking forward to. Like, I knew when I was 10 years old, I wanted to be a professional tennis player. Mm-hmm. And so I just had that drive, and then I started to realize that, like, okay, chances of that are pretty slim to none, but I can at least play in college. I think I felt I had a pretty good chance for that. And when that didn't happen, I'm like, everything, the world, the sky was falling. And then even when I finished college and I started working, I wasn't playing as much tennis, and like I noticed that when I wasn't playing, if I didn't play tennis for too long of a time, I would start like getting like a little crazy. Hmm. Like I
never felt that, actually.
Never felt that?
I was never one of those crazy tennis people that, yeah, I was doing pretty much everything related to tennis the entire day, but I didn't feel like I ate, you know, eat, sleep, breathe tennis in that sense. I didn't like feel it, but I was doing it. Mm. I think my drive to win a competition or whatever it is to do is even now very high. So I think that's what kind of pulled me through every single tournament that I played from 7 years old till whenever, even now. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel like I would be okay if I did not play tennis for a day or two or three or whatever. And even now, sometimes, like, I realize that I didn't play tennis for 5 years.
Yeah.
And I stepped on court and I didn't feel like I did not play tennis for 5 years. My body felt like it because mm-hmm. I had not trained, right? But like my feel and stuff, I was like, wow. It was like I felt good, like mm-hmm. it was a little bit off, but like within like 2 months, like I was feeling sharp again. And but I had to put in a lot of work physically to get back in shape and to like stay. My main goal was to not get injured and to stay fit, which touch wood has been going pretty good so far since I've started. Mm-hmm. So that was my main focus. And sometimes, like, you know, a lot of people get stressed when they miss a practice session and this and you know, or don't play. Like, I know people that play like 5-6 hours a day because they have to feel like they put in the work, which is good. If that's what works for you, great, you do that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not that way. I feel like I need to be fit. I need to feel light. I need to feel strong and be able to move and feel free on court. And this skill is like, I have the confidence that it's always there. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot play tennis for 5 days and go play a few days before mm-hmm. and win a tournament.
I didn't play for 2 weeks when we played today.
I know. I feel like all of that comes back here. It's more mental, I feel, than here.
And with me, like,
I'm not saying do that, don't do that.
Yeah.
Definitely train. But I'm just saying, in case ever there is a scenario where I was sick, like before this tournament, for almost 2 weeks I was sick. I got to play, my first two practice sessions were here because there was nowhere I could train. I was sick, like really bad, but I wanted to play and I was kind of okay to play. And I had 3 days before the tournament and I would see how it went. So my first practice session actually was here. Mm-hmm. And I'm feeling better than I did last month when I played in the other tournaments. So I don't know. I feel like,
I think that the periodic rest, like taking like a week or two off, you hit a certain reset button where, you know, when you're playing a lot, you have a lot of thoughts that are constantly flooding your head. And
I feel like rest is very underrated.
Yeah.
It's super important. It's extremely important. And I realize that now. Like, not back then. And back then also you're a lot younger, so the body also recovers a lot faster. Mm-hmm. Right? You can put your body through so many things and you're gonna be fine the next day. But now you have to be a lot more strategic, and you need to know that, I'm sure that if I took adequate rest back then and planned slightly better, I would probably not be as injured as I was back then. Mm-hmm. I was not severely injured. I just had two major injuries. But like the tiny ones that you get in between, which throws you off for like 3 or 4 weeks, you know, those ones.
Those.
So like you possibly could be avoided if you found a way to, you know, take care of your body and rest when it needs it.
Those little ones are a lot more dangerous than I feel like people think. because let's say you're injured and like you rest and then you try, you're like, oh, I only took like a couple weeks off, and you try to play at the same level. I think the chances of getting another injury right after that, you recover that small one. Let's say it's like your left knee hurts. Well, now because your left leg
you
is injured,
you overcompensate to the right one.
Your right
one
is a little bit, you know,
stiff. All too familiar with that.
Yeah, and then I had a chain of injuries where I was like, I was playing the best tennis of my life, and then I tore my hamstring. I had a little tear, nothing big. Maybe 1 month, 2 months off, and I came back. Hyperextended my knee.
Man.
Took like another like month or two off. Came back, sprained my ankle, or no? I think the sprained ankle was the first one.
And it's all connected.
It was a really bad sprain, and that was like 3 months, 4 months off, and then just coming back.
I feel like we find it really difficult to take a break, to be like, okay, we're injured, cannot really do much. Yeah. You do what you can, and especially at that age when you're playing juniors or when you're in your early 20s or younger than 20s, I feel like sometimes it could also be the guilt. I felt that sometimes, because you're
like,
if
you
you're not putting in the work, if you're not putting in the work, you're not gonna be good. Hard work, especially in India, I feel it's a lot more than other countries. I could be wrong, but I don't know, I just see it a little bit more, where, you know, you're like, you have to put in the work. You can't sleep more than even on Sundays, like, you know, I could not sleep beyond like 8 a.m. My parents would be like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's Sunday, let me sleep. Like, you know, I have absolutely nothing to do that day. But still, they would be like, oh, she's not awake. Like, you know, it's not that they do it on purpose. It's just something that's all they know. Like, if you're sleeping in too late all the time, not all the time in my case, but like, it's like you're lazy. Like, you know, but hey, you're working, like you're morning from 5:30 a.m. till 5 p.m. whatever it is, that how many hours that you train every single day, you're working. That's your work. Your body is, you're putting your body to work. You're training, like, you know, it's a lot more physical than any other things that you do. So like, you need to rest. That is important. And the guilt part, I felt like, you know, when I would like twist my ankle or something, and if I could not play for like 2-3 weeks, I would feel like super shitty. I'm like, oh my God, we put in so much work. My dad spent so much money. You know, I was in such good shape. My coach put in so much work. I could have won the tournament. Like, all these thought comes in, and now I'm just sitting. I'm just doing nothing. I'm going and meeting my friends. Ugh. Like, you know, it's like, I'm just meeting people, I'm just eating great food, like, you know, it's like, it's all the nice things that you look forward to, but like, you're looking at it in a different way back then, because it's like, you just feel super guilty for doing nice things to yourself.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I should not be doing this. I should be in the gym. I should be doing something with my upper body. I was doing that also, but I'm like, I should be doing more. Like, you know, I should be like sitting on a Swiss ball and hitting balls, and not like, I would do that as well. But even when I do that and go out and have a, you know, a nice time with my friends, I would still feel guilty. So like, that's something that I'm pretty sure a lot of people relate to, because that happens even now.
Yeah. And I feel like, especially coming from like a, well, let me ask you this. Did you ever feel, you said like your parents didn't put a lot of pressure on you. There were a lot of like external, you know, talkings and, you know, external stuff. But did you ever feel that like you had to win?
Yeah.
You had to succeed?
Yeah. I mean, there was no other way. I mean, they didn't put any pressure on me. Like, they didn't go and tell me, you have to win. I think a little bit of pressure was implied. That's okay, right? I mean, that's a privilege you get for being, you know, in top five or whatever it is. Like, you are expected to win. Because if you don't win, you're not going to be in that bracket. In whatever category it is. Could be like, you know, state level, national, international, whatever it is. If you are in the top high bracket of the best in whatever category, there is pressure, because you are expected to win because you are one of the best. Mm-hmm. That's implied. That comes with the ranking. I feel, at least that's how I looked at it. And they never said, or they never scolded me after like losing a match. Oh, why didn't you win? Oh, this, nothing like that. Like I never faced that from my parents. But yes, there were expectations to win tournaments, and I did pretty good most of the time. Like I was nailing those expectations. But then when things started to go not the very best, it wasn't like they didn't like make me feel bad about it or something. I think I would beat myself up a lot more than anyone else would. Yeah. So it really did not matter to me what other people said, but they would always try to make me feel better, in fact. So I think that's how it was. But there was, I think the pressure is just generally applied. If you're good, there is pressure. Mm. It's what? Like they say, it's a privilege, right?
Pressure is a privilege.
But I didn't look at it like privilege.
Billie Jean King said that?
Or, yeah, but
or
it's
Arthur
true.
Ashe,
like
one of those.
It comes, if you want to be the best, it comes hand in hand.
Mm. So how long, so you came back to tennis, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been
So I started back? Training November 2020. I think I started going back to the court. Trained for a few months and I started playing some national level tournament in India in the beginning of February or something. So I had decided when I came back as well that I was primarily going to focus on doubles because singles is too cutthroat right now. Like I don't know, I can still play, but I don't know how good I could be or whatever it is. So the primary focus was doubles along with playing some singles. So I played singles and I lost the singles in quarters or something like that, my first two tournaments ever. But the doubles, I won both of them back to back, my first.
Hey.
Yeah. So I was like, wow, like that felt good, like, you know. And then I started to play a few more. Actually, no, after that, it was the second round of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So the country was shut for 4 months. That kind of worked in my favor because my first ITF women's that I played, I qualified and I lost in the first round and I played a 3.5 hour match after 5 years. I played a 3.5 hour match and the next day I couldn't walk. My hips were locked. Like I couldn't walk. It was like, I was like struggling. I was like, okay, I think I need that chair again. Like it was really bad. So I went back and my hip flexors were really weak. My glutes were really weak to play at that level. So yeah, I went back to my physio and my trainer and we were stuck in the academy for 3 months. Academy for like 2 or 3 weeks and then it was lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just stuck in my house, in my apartment, and they have a big cricket ground. So I used to go there and I did the same set of exercises for 9 weeks to strengthen my, yeah, 3 months almost. Like we used to play sometimes and same thing, like the same 8 or 10 exercises every single day, 3 times a day for almost 8 to 9 weeks.
Wow.
And I was like, this is not going to bother me again.
I was talking to Simon Freund. I don't know if you know him.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Swedish player and he was saying something similar when like lockdown completely changed the tennis landscape because
mm-hmm.
there were like less tournaments that were available. Defending points were tougher, so instead of players that were normally playing challengers, they were playing lower tournaments, and it kind of screwed up the whole ranking system. But on top of that, everybody was just training like beasts,
mm-hmm.
and when the smoke cleared, the level just like shot up. A few notches.
I feel like that's why I felt like even when I decided to play tennis again, I was like, maybe this is the best time to do it, like, you know, because everyone's not going to be able to compete. Everyone's going to be training. So I felt like I was not missing out so much in terms of catching up because
mm-hmm.
everyone's going to be training. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to use this chunk to train as well. So I don't know if that made any difference, but that's how I went about it. But this chunk that I used to strengthen my glutes and my flexors again, I think that was a game changer. And after that, I started traveling again. And yes, it still bothers me, but I know how to manage it now. And yeah, after that, I started playing ITFs and I won my first ITF doubles title again, my 18th my 18th, no, 16th title or something like that after 5 years. Let's go. And then, yeah, started playing. And then I came back and I played the nationals in India after 5 years. I didn't have a ranking, so I did not get entry into the tournament. Normally, I would be seeded like 2 or 1, 1, 2 or 3 or something like that. And this time, I was not even getting entry into the tournament. And I had to get a wild card into the qualies. Mm-hmm. So I started from the very bottom. I played 3 rounds of qualies, took out a couple of seeds, surprised myself and made the singles finals and won the doubles title.
Wow.
But so the doubles finals happened before the singles. And I had played, oh my God.
That's a lot of tennis.
I played 13 matches in 9 days.
Wow.
And my finals was the 13th match. And the night before that, I was so exhausted. I couldn't sleep because I was like so exhausted. I don't know if that makes sense. I had to take like a tablet to like painkiller because my body was like, I was in unbelievable pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that morning I was like a zombie and I went on court and that was the only match that was telecasted. And I was so mad at this. Like, you know, I'm like, I played some great matches. Why didn't you show that? And then this was the only match that was telecasted in the center court. And I'm there and I'm like using all my energy, like my reserve. I was done like 2 days ago. So I was pushing, like I was on my reserve like since 2 days.
Running on fumes.
And fumes and smoke. Like it was, I was just like done, like, you know. And I was like, no, come on, this is the final jumps. You gotta push.
What was the score?
So I was up 3-love, 40-love. Okay, 3-love, 40-love. And then I go ding, 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 ding. I was done. I'm in a game after that.
Really?
No, I was so done.
Oh.
3-love, 40-love. I was playing some great tennis and I could not like lift my leg. Like if the ball was coming there, I could see it. I felt like I was going there, but I was not going there. And I was like, oh my God. Like that match was so brutal. I cried for like 2 hours right after the court because it would have been like a beautiful ending. It would be like a double crown, like a comeback. It would have been so beautiful and everyone wanted me to win. And there was like, I kind of felt it too. And I thought I was going to win because if I was fit, like if I could move my legs for sure, like I had the confidence that I was going to win. I mean, when I was moving my legs, I was up 3-love, 40-love. So I was doing the right things and it just dead after that. I sobbed my ass off after that. I called my coach, I called my mom. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And like, I was just sobbing. And then later they kind of like, once that was done, they're like, okay, what you've done so far is pretty great. Like, it's insane.
It's pretty good.
And I was like, it took me like, that whole day I was like so upset. I was so upset the whole day. And then I was so like mad, even at the prize ceremony. That one, like, you know, the bigger cup, like, you know. But then I was like, you know, it's okay. Like,
this is like a national, Indian national,
yeah, it's the biggest national championship in India. It happens every year in New Delhi in the Khanna Stadium.
Wow. And so you almost wild card entry into the qualies.
But I mean, I won the doubles and
you won the doubles, which is absolutely,
it's
huge.
Nice, but it was nice. It was not too bad, I would say. It was, I think I was too hard on myself when I look back at it now, and I'm like, shit, like, that's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, what?
That is pretty crazy.
And then that gave me like confidence in my singles as well a little bit that year, because I beat some good players who are now top 3 and 4 in the country right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, you still got, I always knew I had some gas left in the tank, but I wasn't so confident in singles. I lost 7 weeks in a row in Tunisia before that. I didn't even qualify. Wow. I was like, did I make the wrong decision to play tennis again? Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I was going through that. And then from like, the confidence was like here. But I don't know, when I went to play that nationals, I was like so hungry. Like, I feel like that just like came onto the court. Like, I felt like whoever was on that side, I could win. Mm-hmm. I wanted to win, or I was going to try to win no matter what. So,
And this was what,
2021. 2021. October. Oh.
Okay, so like what,
two and a half years ago. Mm-hmm.
And so since then, you've been back on track, you know, in the routine.
It's been a little up and down and sometimes stagnant. 2021 end and till 2022 mid year, it was going good. And then towards the end, I had a little bit of, I played my first WTA in Chennai as well. That was a phenomenal experience. And that kind of, you know, I always believed that I was up there in terms of, especially skill wise and game wise in doubles for sure. And that playing that and playing with like the top 100 players and stuff like top 150 players as well, made me feel like I could play with them. Like I was not out of place. I didn't feel out of place. So I was like, okay. This is like, it's not just in your head, like it's happening in reality. Mm-hmm. You know, that confidence that I was talking about faking it. Now I was believing it when I played that. So I was like, okay, you can play.
Did you play singles and doubles?
No, I just played doubles. I got a wild card, so I played just doubles.
Who did you play with?
I played with Riya Bhatia. She's also from Delhi.
And she got a wild card?
Like, we got it together as a team. Okay. And we lost 5-2, I think, in the first round. They ended up losing in the semis. I felt like we could have won that match if things went, at least the first set, I don't know about the match, if things went slightly different, 1 or 2 points, but then again, doubles is always 1 or 2 points and you always feel like you can win. So, yeah. So I don't know. But yeah, I felt like super confident, at least in my ability after playing that. That was a game changer for me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I started playing that, and then 2020, last year has not been the best, I'm not going to lie. It's been a little brutal, but yeah, you pull through.
Where do you, so that kind of leads me to my next question is like, what are you trying to get out of it? Are you just playing for the sake of playing and because you have the competitive drive, or is there something more?
I feel like I've not yet fulfilled my potential for myself. I feel like I'm holding myself back a lot. I don't know why.
In what way?
I feel like I could be a lot more highly ranked than I am right now. And I feel like I could be one of the best doubles players in the world. I feel it, but it's not translating into reality yet. And I feel like it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when. Mm-hmm. And if I can hang on until that when. Mm-hmm. And hanging on until that happens is not just me believing in it. It's also a few other factors that needs to come into play.
Like what?
Like sponsors. You need money to go play tournaments. You need a little bit of luck here and there, you know? Like it helps. Yes, hard work, sure, definitely. There's no shortcut. But the universe could be a little kinder too. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's just, it's a lot of things. Finding the right doubles partner, picking the right weeks, having the, you know, financial freedom to go and play week after week in different places, wherever you can play. It's not just me. A lot of us are going through the same thing. Many of the players are in the same boat. It's just a matter of who hangs on, who pulls through, who believes that they can do it, and who find a way to keep going in every way. Like, if you, like, they say if there's a will, there's a way. Sometimes if there's will, there's no way, but you have to find a way, make your own way, whatever it is. Like, you do whatever you can to keep playing. Mm-hmm. As long as you have this joy and belief in it. So that's where I'm at.
I think a perfect example of the perseverance of just, let's say you want to be number one in the world and it's going to happen. And sometimes it happens when you're 43.
Exactly. There's no better example than Rohan. And I train in his academy and I coach this. And I'm like, I was kind of like going through it. Like, you know, the last year I was like, shit, like, am I making, like, you know, is this it? Like, you know, it crosses. And I'm 30 years old. And I'm like, is this it? Like, yes, there's, you can do better, but you're not doing better. So like, is this all in your head? Like, you know, maybe it's time to like call it quits and things like that. But then he said it so beautifully, you know, that every single person has their own journey, their own timeline that you travel on. You can't compare yourself with other people because that's not, I think he said, if I'm not wrong, I think he said that if you look at, if you turn limitations into opportunities, it's a game changer.
If you turn limitations,
if you turn your limitations into new opportunities, uh-huh. it changes everything. And that's so true. Like, you know, I don't know, like, if I look at my journey to someone else, it's like, yeah, I'm too old to do anything in tennis. But you never know.
But you never know. Does he, I'm curious, does he ever, if you work like in the same academy, does he give you like any like tips or?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's one of the most approachable tennis players of that caliber ever that I've met. And not just me, like any kid that's in the academy, if you ask him a question, he's there, he's going to give you his honest opinion and he's going to be super nice about it because that's just how he is. Mm-hmm. And I think that he's one of the people that actually genuinely wants to give back. He wants to help you out. Mm-hmm. He wants to help whoever out if he can. He doesn't need to. He can just do his own thing, mm-hmm. like, you know, but he wants to give back and he wants to help you out. And I think that's what sets him apart. And like, even if you look back, there was a call, I think, in one of the Grand Slams semifinal or something like that. And nobody saw him touch the racket. The ball touched his racket and nobody saw him. And the point was going on and he stopped. It was a tiebreak or something. It was super important. And he stopped the point and he said that, hey, it's their point. It touched my racket. Nobody caught it, except maybe the camera or something like that. You don't need to do that. Technically, it's not the point. The umpire is not given the point, mm-hmm. but that just shows your moral and conduct, right? So yeah. I think that's what, you don't just have to be a good tennis player. You have to be a good person as well.
Mm. I'm curious. And so India has like a history of like putting out like some of the best doubles players in kind of history. You got Bopanna, Leander Paes, you got Mirza on the women's side. She also had like a mm-hmm. like a late career as well, if I'm not mistaken.
No, she's had a great career from the start.
No, late.
Oh, she played until yeah. recently. Okay.
Yeah.
She just retired last year, I think.
Last year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
From last year or the year before.
She had a kid as well mm-hmm. in the midst of it as well.
Yeah.
Where do you see this going? Like what's the?
So my short term goal right now.
What are some goals?
I'm 590 in doubles right now. I think in the next few months I want to jump to within 300, top 250 at least.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's over ambitious or not. I don't know. I feel like I can do it, and I'm believing in myself to be able to do it, and I'm hoping to get that at least by mid-year, end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and then keep picking up from there. But if that doesn't happen and I'm still stagnant, then we got to sit down and figure things out.
Mm. How do you find a doubles partner? What do you look for in a doubles partner?
Energy. Great energy. I think doubles is, like I said, at this ranking or whatever it is, everyone can hit every single stroke. It's how you combine together as a team, and doubles can change like this. Like, it's not like singles. Like, yes, singles also can change like this, but double changes much faster. You can be like 6-love 5-1 and still lose the match. Super tiebreak is anyone's game.
Mm.
So it's all about energy. It's like all about how well you gel with your partner, how well you get to know each other, because like, it's very rare that two players are always in this level, right? Like, yes, ideally that's where you want to be, but sometimes someone dips and you got to pick up, and then you dip and they got to pick up, and it's got to be like a team. You got to be like, you push each other to play better.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes with the attitude, the energy, and I think that's the most important thing.
How's my energy today?
Super.
How would you rate me on the scale of all of your doubles partners? Where do I fit in this?
Since you got me food, I think it would be 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10?
Yeah.
We, you know, in the words of, in your words, I feel like we could have won that match.
Yeah, I think we could have too. Yes, I know.
We almost made a comeback. We're down, I think, like, what, 5-1, something mm-hmm. like that. And then we got to, like, 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
And then I missed a couple. I missed an overhead on match point. It's like, whatever. It was fun. You were also, I thought they were higher ranked. So Janya used to be like higher ranked, wasn't she?
Janya was also in the 500s. Yeah. And now she's been injured, so she hasn't played as many tournaments. Mm-hmm. She's back. She's now 900s, but I'm sure she'll climb back.
I'm curious because I see so many players, they spend, you know, like a few years, you know, trying to go pro or being pro, however you want to put it. If you're not making any money, I don't know if you're a pro, whatever.
None of us are making money unless we cracked top 100.
Yeah, and you know, that's precisely the point that I'm trying to make. Like, a lot of people go through it and they give it, you know, a few years. Some people give it even, you know, more time. And it kind of leads to like a dead end.
Yeah.
Only because the top is just such a finite amount of spots. For me, it just seems kind of like, I don't want to sound like pessimistic about it, but it kind of seems like why try?
Yeah. I mean, if you're practical about it, don't even bother. Put your kid in another sport. It's not like the odds of your child becoming a top 100 player is literally 100 in thousands, right? So, and especially if you want to be the best player in the world, like, it's very few, one in a million, like, you know, that's going to happen. So, like, if you feel like, I feel like all of that, you can't really blame it on the child. The parents need to be more aware and plan the kid's future. Because the kid is not going to have the maturity or the mental capacity to plan his or her life when they're 12, 13 years old, or 14, 15, even 16 sometimes. Like, you know, like, I feel like that, I could be wrong, but I feel like that responsibility falls more on the parents. Because they are the ones that decided to put the kids into the sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't know. If you asked me when I was 9, what do you want to know? I'd be like, I want to eat chaat and then paint and like...
Say eat chalk?
Chaat. It's an Indian savory... It's Indian snacks. Like, you know.
Okay.
I just wanted to do stupid stuff and be out with my friends, right? So, like... I don't have the decision-making skills to plan my future at that age, especially when, and if you want to turn pro, if you want to break into the top 10, top 100 now, kids are training at 2 years old now. I know people that started playing when they were 3 years old who are now 28. So like the planning has to be done way more in advance. So I feel like the future for this, the parents need to be aware that it's a very brutal sport. Monetary wise, you're only going to make it if you crack into that small niche bracket. If that doesn't happen, there needs to be something for my kid to fall back into or another option that they can venture into. But if that happens, great. You put all your energy into that happening. But if that does not happen, you need to kind of, you know, plan something. I'm not saying financially, but like skill wise at least, like for your child to be okay to do something else.
What do you plan on doing if you've thought about it when you're done pursuing tennis professionally? Do you have any idea?
I've been coaching since I started again
coaching?
And I wasn't sure if I was gonna like it, but I really do. I enjoy it. I feel like I have a lot of things to give back. And I enjoy coaching and I like traveling and I like helping the player out. And my biggest problem was like, would I be able to like hold back and not want to jump onto that court and play for them? Like that happens, you know, some players cannot be coaches because they cannot do that. But I've been having a great time. I've been traveling with a couple of players and I really enjoy it. And it's teaching me more as well as a player. So I think I would like to continue coaching. But I would also, I have a degree in psychology. I want to do my master's and I think I definitely want to be a therapist as well. So, and I write and I think I'm going to do a bunch of things.
I wanted, so I kind of want to move the conversation a little bit away from tennis, and also kind of pick apart Sharmada. Who mm-hmm. is Sharmada without tennis?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tennis podcast, but I'm here with you. I know you do a lot of, you write a lot of poetry.
Yes, I write a lot of things. Like, I like poetry. I relate to it. I feel like when the more... I think I always read books and I always liked reading and listening to poetry and songs, because growing up, I didn't have that many friends because, you know, and not to sound like, you know, this poor kid that never went anywhere, but hey, I never went anywhere. I was just playing tennis. I just went from, you know, the hotel to the court.
Listen,
it's the story of every single tennis
player.
That
makes two of us, yeah.
Exactly. So, like, I didn't have, like, I was not hanging out with, like, a group of people, like, you know. So, I didn't have friends until much later in life. So, the only thing that kept me company was books, was music, was things like that. So I started writing a lot. I used to journal a lot because I found it really difficult to open up and express how I feel. Mm-hmm. My dad's that way, and I think I've taken that gene, but now I'm a lot better because you work on it and you realize these things, right? But back growing up, I found it really difficult to express how I felt. I would always be okay, like no matter what, like I would be, like I would never complain, but inside I would not be feeling okay. So mm-hmm. That was my outlet, like writing and reading was my outlet. So I always wrote, like, since I was young, and it felt good, like writing. And in between, I had stopped, and then I suddenly started writing again, like not just poetry, but about various topics, and I kept it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I showed a couple of friends like a few years ago, and they're like, oh my God, this is really good. You need to put it out there. I was really shy. I was like, oh my God, some of this stuff is pretty deep. Like, it's pretty intense. They're going to think I'm sad all the time. Like, you know, and then they convinced me to, like, make a page on Instagram and put my stuff out there. And I did it. But I took it down. I took it down because people started stealing my stuff and I didn't have the energy to sue them. Like,
really?
You know, yeah, it started, like, I'm like, this is what I wrote. Why are you taking that? Like, you know, it was just one more thing. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna wait a little longer till I become more famous and then I'm gonna put it out there. But no, I do share, like, I do share stuff. That page was just specifically for writing and it was doing really well. And I did get messages like, hey, are you okay? You seem really sad. and I'm like, no, this was just like one point in my life or one moment in my life where I felt upset or I felt sad or depressed or whatever it is, like the emotion that you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I wrote about it. And after that, the moment passed. I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
But this was written during that moment. And it's not that I just write sad stuff, I write happy stuff too, like, you know, but that nobody cares, like everyone's worried about that. But I was really surprised by the amount of people that reached out to me for those emotions privately. Everyone's so ashamed. Everyone is like so scared to admit that they're sad or that they're not feeling so good. But so many people relate to it. And they messaged me and they're like, oh my God, I can relate to this so much. Thank you. I needed to see this today.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, oh my God, even you? Like, you felt this way? You're so happy all the time. Like, you're just cracking jokes all the time. Like, you felt this way? I'm like, yeah, I feel this way a lot more than you think I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. I just felt like people relating to that and, like, writing to me saying that, hey, I also feel this way, or thank you, I needed to see this. Even if one person felt better knowing that someone else felt
mm-hmm.
this way, that made me feel good. So I kept putting more things out there.
Mm-hmm.
And just my thoughts on a certain topic or something like that, but in a little bit artistic way, not
mm-hmm.
just written like, I don't like this. Like, you know, just like phrased it a little differently, or just wrote it the way that it came into my mind. And that was, yeah, I feel like it got picked up by one or two publications and then it went slightly viral as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, I know that this is something that I can do as well. So I've been writing, I don't share as much. A lot of people tell me to put it out there more, But I stopped posting a lot of things on Instagram, but now I'm slowly starting to be a little bit more active, mm-hmm. because I get overwhelmed a lot. Even like now, my phone's like, we just posted a new reel or something like that, tennis related, and it's blowing up. And I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, there's so many messages. I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. It happens a lot to me. So like sometimes I just leave my phone and I'm like, I'm just going to take a moment and I'm going to do my things. I'm going to eat my food and then I'm going to be okay.
I do that all the time. If I make a post and I have a feeling, like I make some posts and I'm like, this one's going to be like, okay. But then there are other ones I'm like, nah, I think this one's going to be good. I don't even think about it anymore. I put my phone down and then like, whatever.
So at one point, my phone was blowing up for like 4 weeks every time because I made a reel and it went viral. It was that reel of copying Monfils, hitting the ball around the person standing, the one with Roger in him as well.
And then he hits.
Yeah, so I did that with one of my friends and it went viral. And like it was like an impromptu thing that we added on. And it went like 2.2 million views. It superseded the original video 4 times. And every time I just refreshed my Instagram, there would be new likes. And it was just blowing up. And I was like, I cannot do this. Like,
so I turn off notifications on for Instagram, for everything, for messages, for...
That month, I could not keep up with the messages. I could not, like, I didn't know what was going on there. Yeah. And then I was just like, oh my God, I went off Instagram for like 5-6 weeks or something.
Instagram and posting on Instagram, it's a tricky game.
Sometimes you need to do it. It's there for you. It's a tool at your disposal. As long as you're controlling it and it's not controlling you, I think we're good. But the moment the power dynamic shift, then you gotta reset. I feel that way. And so far I get overwhelmed with messages in general, not just Instagram. Like if there are too many tasks that need to be done and if I don't do it, I was controlling my yawn for so long like a true professional, but no.
Me too.
I think we need to cap it.
Yeah, we'll close it out pretty soon. What I do with it when I'm really slow to respond to things, and it's just kind of like in general, like I can respond to certain things, but I take my time because I need my space and just, you know.
Yeah, I feel like if I'm not focused, I won't give like an honest response.
That's another
like you're answering this like half-assed, like this is not okay, like this person needs your complete undivided attention in this message that is going to be 3 words.
Yeah.
Like even that, like, yeah, I feel like if I'm not focused, I can't, like, I get anxious and I'm like, oh my God, what if I type the wrong thing or things like that. So I need to be like fully in it to message, and gets a little difficult if there's so many messages to clear.
Yeah, and I think that's also, it's out of respect, you know, like you want to give it your full attention. You don't want to give a half-assed
sometimes
response.
I forget.
People
hate me, but I mean, I'm doing my best, guys.
Yeah.
Like even WhatsApp messages sometimes, like, it's not like I get so many messages that I'm, you know, that I need to be crying about it. But like even it's a lot. And nowadays there's so much spam. Like it's just like messing up your entire message thing. And if there's something that's unopened, it bothers me so much, so much. But yeah.
So to close it off, I want to do like a rapid fire question.
Okay.
So
let's go.
Shorter, better, and just go through it.
Mm-hmm.
Who was your role model growing up?
Justin Henin-Hardin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's your favorite stroke?
The serve and my forehand, too.
If you could win one tournament
mm-hmm.
in the world, which one would it be?
The Olympics.
The Olympics.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite current tennis player?
Serena Williams. She stopped, but when she made a comeback, I like Serena.
Who, if you could play doubles?
No, I like, I take that back. Ask me that question again. We're going to pretend like this didn't happen.
Who's your favorite, who's your current tennis player?
wait, why am I not prepared for this? I just asked you to ask me again. I went to men's suddenly, like, you know, all of a sudden.
It could be whatever, as long as you're actively playing.
Tennis player, okay, go again. Same question again.
Who is your favorite current tennis player?
I like Sabalenka.
Sabalenka.
Yeah.
If you could play doubles with one person, who would it be?
Men or women's or both?
Either one. Only one. One match to win it all.
Rohan.
Rohan?
Yes, let's manifest this.
How old were you when you had your first crush?
Me?
Yeah.
Oh, late. I think I was like 13, 12, 13. One last question and we can.
One last question?
Yeah.
What is the best tennis podcast?
Tipsy Tennis Podcast. That's the only right answer.
That's the only right answer. On that note,
thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Such a long podcast.
What time is it?
It's 10 o'clock.
Like an hour and some change?
2 hours. Hour and 40 minutes.
Hour 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I told you the time goes quickly.
No wonder I was so hungry.
Thank you for taking the time.
Of course. Thank you for having me. This was fun. Yeah, the whole day was fun. We got some great content too.
A bunch of content is on the way.
Mm-hmm.
We played an epic singles match. It was tiebreakers to 10 and we were
feeding. I may or may not have let him win.
That's I had one of the greatest comebacks of my career. Let's just put it that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't. You have to watch to find out.
Yeah.
Highlights to come as well. We played doubles with a
Saujanya. There we go.
And Akanksha.
Yes.
Which is pretty good. I only had to fly to India to do this, so you know, no big deal. But I'm super happy that we're able to make this happen. Originally, I was gonna go to Bangalore and catch you at home, but you ended up playing this tournament, which is also pretty cool. And then you were mentioning to me that there's a men's challenger.
Yes.
That's also in New Delhi, so I'm gonna try to go back. You leave tomorrow. I'm gonna go back to the tournament, check it out a little bit, check out the men's stuff, and I wish you the best. I don't know when is the next time I'm going to see you in person. Hopefully,
maybe I'll come to the States again.
Maybe you come to the States.
There's another wedding in India.
Maybe there's another wedding in India. But I wish you the absolute best. I hope your drive doesn't go away. I said it in the very beginning. You're just this spark of life.
Thank you so much.
This never-ending, you know, just like, you know, you, even whether it's tennis or like, you know, not tennis on and off the court, like, you know, I think it's really inspiring hearing like this entire story, which is like why I like really like went out of the way to talk to you about it. And I want to do it in person because the online stuff just doesn't do the same thing. And I think so many people can relate to the things that you've said, can learn from, you know, your story and use that to create their own timeline, you know, and not use it as a comparison, but as inspiration, because I think, you know, your entire journey, you know, from very early on is inspiring just to see like somebody just.
That's so nice. Thank you so much.
Like really devote themselves to anything that they do. You know, and I think, you know, we're lacking that, I think, a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the willingness to go through the ups and downs, to go through hell, and to continue going through it until you get out. And, you know, I'm glad you felt comfortable also enough to share your stories with me. And,
that's it. Thank you so much.
On the count of three, I want to give you a hug.
Okay.
I'll give you a hug right now. On the count of three, we're gonna say stay tipsy.
Okay.
Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Stay tipsy. And hydrated.
Ooh. Oh boy.